Tonight's guest speaker is the amazing Gary, who's here on behalf of his son, Max, the Adventurer Captain Lantis. Hello, Gary. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Tom. Very well. How are you? Thank you for letting me come on. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, my friend. For anyone who doesn't know, a couple of months ago, Gary and I and his wife, Sarah, Max, spent some time and we did a Zoom chat and we recorded our first ever Diabetes Chat Stories, which is on our website and YouTube channel. And it was amazing getting to know the guys. And from what I saw about it was, I think it was Roz actually that tweeted something up about the Adventures of Captain Lantis. And it just got me looking. And I checked out your website, Gary, and it was just like reading your story about Max. It was just so incredibly emotional. And I just wanted to make contact with you. And if you remember one of the first tweets I sent, messages I sent you, it wasn't about, hey, Gary, come talk to me, come whatever. It was just about, wow, what amazing guys you Sarah, are for like young Max, and like what incredible little chap he is, like for everything he does. And so, yeah, we spent some time, didn't we? And we had a little chat. And tonight, what we'll do is, if it's all right with you, we'll go over some of them things. And if there's any questions from anyone else, then we can talk about that. Do you want to maybe tell us a little bit, Gary, about, did you, before Max was diagnosed, did you have any sort of knowledge or experience of diabetes? Did you have any experience in the family or friends, or was it completely new when it finally came?
Yeah, it was completely new, if I'm honest. I've never met anybody that has type 1 or type 2. No friends, no family. So it was a total shock to us, really. I think I'd mentioned before, but when Max was diagnosed, the actual doctor had asked us when we took Max in. Max was 18 months old when he was diagnosed with type 1. Very scary. The diagnosis was very, very scary. Max went into a coma where he was there for 48 hours. The doctors basically told us then that, you know, he was in trouble and that we might have to go into intensive care. When 24 hours earlier, our GP checked him, didn't check his blood sugar, but asked us about if there was anybody in our family that was type 1, because his symptoms were he was drinking a lot, he was weeing a lot, he was losing weight, he was tired, he had a cold-like symptoms for about a week leading up to it. So we were really, really, it still angers me today. And it's sort of, what, 7-8 years on now. It's gone that quickly, yeah, but it still angers me now, really. So the doctor just sent us home with some antibiotics. And again, you know, we had no idea what type 1 was. So we took it, you know, that the doctor knew what she was talking about and sent us home. And then, like you say, 24 hours later, Max slipped into a coma and we almost lost him. So it was a big learning curve, Tom. As a massive learning curve for us.
Wow. Yeah, I think every time I listen to that and I've read it on your blogs and stuff, it just really touches home there. It must have been really frustrating, isn't it, that Max is really poorly. Yeah. What sort of symptoms did he have then in then lead-up days up to his official diagnosis?
Yeah, so it was just weird. Like I say, he was only 18 months old, and you know, even though he had a cold, and he did have a cold, runny nose, but it wasn't the first time that he had those symptoms since he had been born. I mean, you know, a lot of children get runny noses and things like that. And it never stopped him in his tracks. You know, he's still running around the house like he would with his, you know, his nappy on, running outside, running back in. We didn't really think that there was anything seriously wrong with him, if I'm honest. It wasn't really when he started. When we first started noticing it was in the mornings, because his cot was so wet, you know, where he'd peed through the night. But we just keep thinking, well, that's because he's drinking so much. He's drinking constantly. And so you put two and two together and think, well, that's pretty much why it is. My wife, Sarah, she thought it was the nappies. She thought the nappies were rubbish because all the chemicals in the nappies were all over his stomach, all down his legs. And every morning we had to get him changed in the shower and get him ready for the day, sort of thing. But we honestly thought it must be the nappies are not very good. And it wasn't until that went on for a few probably about 2 or 3 days. So it wasn't a whole week, but 2 or 3 days. And we just thought, that just can't be right. It just can't, that can't be normal.
No.
And we had had, it was coming up to Halloween in 2013, because we had planned a Halloween party. It was on the Friday. So we had planned a party and everything with the family and stuff. And Max was, you know, looking forward to that. We had just tried his, you know, fancy dress costume on and everything. And he was really looking forward to it. And he loves being around his cousins and his uncles and stuff. But like you say, the day before that party, we thought, we've got to take him to the GP. This just can't, he's just not, it's not right. And like I say, that's when we discussed with the GP everything that I've just sort of told you there around his symptoms. And again, like I say, I can't, it really does anger me that they never checked his bloods there and then, because we wouldn't have went through what we were then going to go through.
I was about to say, it's really, really frustrating. Yeah. All they had to do is get a blood machine, test his blood.
Yeah.
And then that would have given indication, and you could have fired in the car, got to the hospital.
Yeah.
And you hear it quite a lot, don't you? Like I've spoken to people on here and seen tweets and stuff, and people say that it's not always the case that they check the blood levels. They talk about it, or they'll dismiss or go try something else. But surely just
Tom, you know,
just check it out, isn't it?
It's you're a disaster. There and then.
Yeah.
But that comes down to that awareness piece, because like you say, me and Sarah had no idea what type 1 was. No idea. I mean, I think, you know, for the first 3 or 4 weeks, and well, it still happens today, where people are go, oh, is it because you fed him too many sweets, or did he eat too many cakes? Was he overweight? Did you give him too many, you know, too much fizzy pop? I'm like, this boy's 18 months old. Of course, it's nothing to do with that, but it's people, people who don't know what it is always assume it's because of his diet, you know, what we were giving him to eat. And it, you know, like I say, it's so frustrating that she never checked his blood sugar there and then, because our journey after that, you know, that 24 hours after that, our lives were turned upside down. And, you know, groups like this, I've got to say, even though I'm not type 1 diabetic myself, they're a massive help, because I listen into you guys and listening to other people, and I see other people's tweets. And if you follow Captain Lantis, you'll see that I follow everybody within JDRF, Diabetes UK, and anyone that relates to T1D, just so I learn from you guys as well, really. So as a dad, I can educate Max as best I can as he grows older. I mean, Max is 9 now, and he doesn't let diabetes get in his way, not at all. One of the things that I always say is that time when we had the diagnosis and we almost lost him, which obviously would have been absolutely horrendous. It was the most horrendous time of our lives. For the next 18 months after that diagnosis, our lives were, we just never slept. As parents, you just don't sleep because you're worried then he's not going to wake up in the morning. We would set our alarm, and every hour through the night, we would get up and we would take turns and go in and check his blood sugar to check he was all right. It was horrendous, because it affected our day then, because we were both really tired all the time. We weren't sleeping because we were so worried. You know, we were worried sick. You know, what I would say is at that time, and what we say now to families that we meet online, we meet on Facebook and all over the world, by the way, which is amazing, is we go back to that time and we think there was no end. We didn't see a way out of it. Me and Sarah would talk and be upset about it, really, and just think our lives are never going to go back to normal. They're just never going to change. That's it. You know, our lives are done. Sort of thing.
How did you? Yeah, absolutely, mate. Honestly, how did you both feel like having to inject Max and like finger prick him, like not just once a day, but like 6 to 8 times a day, and then obviously treat hypos? How did you guys like do that?
Oh, horrendous! And like I say, my heart goes out to everybody that gets a newly diagnosed child now, and hence why we do what we're doing. But it was horrendous, because for me, for instance, being Max's dad, when he woke up from his coma, and again, like I say, he was there for 48 hours, and those 48 hours for us were like 6 weeks. You know, we were just wanted him to wake up. Now, when he came around, he sat up on he sat up in his bed and everything. And I was obviously me and Sarah were there, but his uncle and his cousins were there as well. So he was like, it was like he wasn't even asleep. He woke up because he saw everybody. He was so happy to see everybody. It was like there was nothing's really happened to him in a way. However, obviously that's when you meet the diabetes teams, who again are amazing, by the way. And they're the same team that he's got today, age 9, that he did when he was 18 months. So they're like family members. You know, Max loves them, which has been great all the way. However, when you first there and they start then showing you these needles and this insulin, and you've got to work out how much insulin he needs in a day and what injections he has and when, it's absolutely mind-blowing. You just think, I'm never going to get my head around this, but if I don't, this is my son's health that you know, will have a major effect on his health. I've got, you know, we've got to get it right. And
yeah,
for myself, I struggled with it because as his dad, especially as his dad, when he woke up, I had him on my lap. And when they came over with the needles and stuff, it's one of the most difficult parts of it. You know, if somebody said to me, what are the worst parts of it? It would be obviously the diagnosis and the coma piece. But one of the worst bits for me was when he come around, because when they wanted to give him the injection, Max was absolutely begging me not to let them do it to him. But instead of me protecting him from that, I had to hold him down, pin his arms down for them to do it. And that was the most heartbreaking piece. I just couldn't get my head around it. And yeah, it took me a couple of weeks. It took me probably a good month before I could even do it. But Sarah, my wife, who I didn't think would be able to, but she just literally, her mother instinct just took over and she just took over it. Like literally, I was pretty much running away from it at first because I just didn't know how to cope with it. Where Sarah just took it and went, I'll do it. Yeah.
I can't even imagine how difficult it was just listening to you now. Yeah. And it's mad, isn't it? Like, yeah. I know how challenging it is for us as people with diabetes. And I was, 16, 17, and I know everyone has different stories and diagnosed at different times, but wow, like having a child at 18 months old diagnosed with diabetes who isn't sort of talking or isn't able to express simple conversations to try and, like, for you guys to help him out, and, you know what I mean, waking up every hour and checking him. And, like, my son, this is no different, like, no, like, similar connection, but right now Harry is really poorly and he's got really poorly nose that's running and it's sort of crusty up a bit, and to kind of clean him up, Gary, and kind of like do that, he screams and he's like, ah, get off me, dad, sort of thing. So I can't even imagine like having to like inject someone with insulin and so let's look at it then. So Max, obviously, he was diagnosed, and then he started off on insulin injections, and obviously blood machines. What insulin was he on to start? And can you tell us a little bit about his sort of evolution of changing the technology onto where he is now, sort of thing?
Yeah, so he had bolus injection in the morning. So he had one injection that would last for 24 hours. It seems so long ago that he was on that, to be fair now. But we'd have an injection every morning, which was the background insulin that we had. And then he was on Lantus then. So he had that, which obviously we gave to him every, you know, with every meal. It was just really difficult because Max's diabetes as well was very... They even said to us, it was really said. So if Max was at a blood sugar of 4.3, for instance, something around that mark, if you give him half a biscuit, like literally half of a rich tea, if he ate half of a rich tea, which is not a lot in that, but within half an hour to an hour, he'd be 15, 16, 17 going upwards. He was just so sensitive. Everything you gave him, it just literally, but again, it was really difficult because he was 18 months, you know, 2 years old, going, can I have a biscuit? Can I have this? He didn't understand why he couldn't have it.
Of course. Because obviously then you have to, And you know what I mean? Children of that age, the game, the cupboards, or they're asking mum and dad for biscuits. And you know what? Us people with type ones, we can still have these treats and things, and we have to obviously be aware of things. But an 18-month-year-old who doesn't understand that must have been really, really difficult, because their instinct is just, "Daddy, I want a biscuit." And you can have one now, but like 10 minutes later, "Daddy, can I have a biscuit?" I know my young character is that, but like you say, if you're going from a 4 to suddenly 15 to on a half a biscuit, it's quite scary for you guys to sort of manage, isn't it?
Yeah, hence why we didn't sleep, you know, and we just couldn't control his blood sugar with insulin pens. We just couldn't do it. And I like going just going on the conversation we were having before I came on, really interesting, because the insulin pump that we have has totally changed our lives and the way we look after Max and the way Max looks after himself now. You know, we're trying to get him to, you know, understand it more, and he does understand it more, but to try and really get him engaged in it, you know, using his insulin pump, understanding what it does and why it's important. But just the insulin pens themselves, we just couldn't control his blood sugar. We either give him too much, not enough, because he was all his bloods were all over the place. So when Max was three, the diabetes team that looks after Max said, you know, how about going on to an insulin pump? Now, that was a big decision as a parent, and a big decision. And the reason it was a big decision is when Max never had a insulin pump, diabetes was invisible to everybody else. So it was only us who knew he had it. So if you went swimming or you do anything, when he's out anywhere, nobody would ever know there was anything wrong with Max, you know, because you wouldn't know. It's invisible, isn't it? So
Course.
when we and that was one of the things, it was stupid to think like it in a way, because we were looking at it in the thing of around, well, if Max has an insulin pump, that means he wears a bag around his waist, a tube inside his stomach constantly. So every time he has a shower, we're reminded of it. Every time he goes swimming, people will see it. Every time he's out and about, we've got to change him, people will see that Max is. And that was it was a stupid way of thinking, because we don't think like that anymore. It was just ridiculous. It was just because it was new, and I think we were in denial because we didn't want him to have it in the first place. Like none of us do, none of you guys do. We just it was very much the early days. Like anybody that gets anything that is life changing, it's why me, why us, why have we? You know, we're from a big family. Max has lots of cousins. I have lots of brothers and sisters, and we're the only. You know, Max is the only child in our whole family that has, you know, type one or anything like that, that sort of affects your everyday life and stuff. So it was really hard to get our heads around at first. Now, when we went on to the insulin pump, although it has changed our lives, and it has, but it was still like learning it all over again. So Max was three, and I'll never forget the day, because we went to the GP surgery where he had this pump fitted, and it was torture. Max was absolutely three, and he was absolutely crying his eyes out. They had to pin him, trying to pin him down to put this thing on him, you know, put the pump up, put the cannulas in. He just wouldn't have it to be. He just didn't want it. He was absolutely petrified. So me and
Petrified,
Sarah,
yeah.
oh, so me and Sarah put one of them on ourselves. We put a cannula in ourselves to show him that it didn't hurt, it was fine, but that still
Yeah.
wasn't winning him over. He still
Course
wouldn't have it.
not.
Yeah, he wouldn't have
Yeah.
it. But in the end, you know, they put it on him. Max was fitted with the Medtronic 640G at the time, and we were very, very lucky. And that's because we managed to get the funding for the CGM with it, because they thought that Max's diabetes was, you know, because it was so chronic, because it moved so quickly, and we could not control his blood sugar at all. Then, you know, we managed to, the NHS funded that for us, which was amazing. So we're very lucky to have that. And like I say, when we got home, he was absolute, you know, he was sat on the sofa and he was still sobbing. I think he was sobbing for ages afterwards. He just couldn't calm him down, and he just kept looking at himself to go, what is this? Why have I got this stuck to me? What is it? It was not very good. It wasn't a nice time, really. But children,
did you have options of the pumps available to you?
Yeah, we did. However, when Max was first, we met somebody from Medtronic at the hospital, who were talking us through what Medtronic, you know, what the pump does, how it works. And we looked at a couple of different options, and we spoke to a family actually that had the insulin pump, that pump in particular as well, and sort of reassured us a little bit that, you know, it was the, you know, for them it was the right thing, for them it worked. So therefore, you know, and again, Tom, you know, we had no idea about all the different pumps, what they did, how they worked. This one here blew our minds. Yeah. If I'm honest, there was still a lot we had to do with this pump. But the one thing the pump did have, which is the reason why it changed our lives, is that with the CGM, obviously with the 640G, it would alarm. So every time his blood's dropped, it would alarm us to tell us that we need to go in and do something. Or,
I bet that was such a game changer, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it would switch off the insulin, alarm would go off, we would go in. And then we would know whether we check his bloods anyway, just to make sure it's definitely, it matches what the pump was doing. But it also give us it told us what way his blood sugar was going, whether it was going up or whether it was going down, which obviously, as you know, with a pen, and at the time we just had a normal blood monitor then. So it didn't show us which way it was going. The Libra, I think, had just come out at the time, because we did try that just before we went on to the pump. But we had to pay for that ourselves, but that made a difference, just knowing which direction the blood sugar was going. It was a game changer, and you know, Max sort of got used to it. We got used to it. It wasn't perfect, but it was a life changer. There were still things we had to do with it. Currently, Max is now on the 780G with CGM, so the newest model of that Medtronic pump. And so far, again, we would never go back to pen. One day, I've said to Sarah before, and I've said it to Max, is that when Max is old enough to look, you know, to be able to go, right, Dad, I know what I'm doing. I know how to control my blood sugar. I know how all this diabetes works. Now I'm deciding not to be on an insulin pump. Then that's fine. I'm going to let him make that decision. But while we're mm-hmm. as carer, if you like, it's changed our mm-hmm. lives completely, because the new pump actually gives him insulin. So if we get it wrong, if we put in the wrong carbs, the pump adjusts itself. So basically, it will start giving him insulin to bring his blood sugar back down again. If we don't,
how incredible is that?
Sorry,
that's amazing, isn't it? That's just a game changer.
Yeah,
quality of life, isn't it?
Yeah,
literally, not only for the person with diabetes, but the people supporting that person with diabetes. And you know what, these people that support the people with diabetes, they go through it as much as we guys do, you know what I mean? My wife is so supportive and has been there so many times. I'm sure people listening on the line will vouch for their partners or family. Absolutely incredible. And I guess now, looking where you are now with the technology, Gary, that you're able to get a bit more sleep, are you?
Yeah, a bit more beauty sleep, although I need more, apparently. Still not enough.
It's a difference from waking up every hour and going to have to check his
fingerprint. It's the reassurance, Tom. It's the reassurance, especially now because he's at school as well. So the teachers, you know, our diabetes team go into the school and they train the teachers. So Max is going to go into a new year group when he goes back, and that the teachers there will be taught how to use the pump, even though Max sort of helps them along with it now because he's a bit older and he understands how it works. But they interact with that, with the pump at school and everything else like that. So again, that helps him at school. So we had a report that basically, you know, I think it was not long after he had his first insulin pump, around how it's helped him at school, because he's not getting interrupted as much, because the alarms are not going off as much. So he doesn't have to, because what Max said to me, and there's lots of things that people don't see, you know, from a parent's perspective. And that's just things like where Max will come home from school and he'll say, oh, I hate it when my pump goes off because the whole school looks at me, because it always goes off when I'm in assembly and I've got to get out. And it's sort of things like that where you think, well, I remember when I was at school and the last thing I'd want is attention when I was in front of, you know, all of the school sort of thing all the time. Or things like when he's playing football and he loves playing football with his friends, but he's got to stop because his blood sugars are dropping too quickly. So it means he keeps getting interrupted all the time when he wants just wants to play.
Yeah.
And there's things like that where you don't, people, other people don't see it. It's like even with me and my wife, so me and Sarah, since he was diagnosed, we've never been out together. Just us. Never. Because we can't we can't have anybody look after him, because it might be an element of our fault as well, because we worry too much that it's putting too much of a burden on somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. And if anything went wrong, so we would just worry. But that's like 7-8 years where every time we go out for a meal, Max comes with us. Every time we go to the cinema, Max comes with us. You know, it's and it's nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's that sometimes you just want to go out together, you know, and we haven't been able to do it. Not once.
I have a question.
Yep.
So and kind of in regards to that, I know like over here in my area, there's like Facebook groups based on the area where like they have babysitters who also have type 1 who babysit other type 1 kids. Yeah. Have you taken like that into consideration?
Well, to be honest, I've not seen anything like that here. I mean, if there was that, there probably is, if I'm honest, but I've never really sort of not really looked. I think we've got in a, I think it's more that we've got in a, stuck in a rut with it. I think it's just become normality that we just want to,
yeah,
you know, look after him all the time. But now he's a little bit older, because he, you know, even going to his friend's house and things like that, we get his friends here instead of letting him go there. And I think it's just been, because he was 18 months when he was diagnosed, and it's been sort of 8 years, and we've just got used to this way of living. We've got, me and Sarah need to let go and trust him. So trust his mum's friends, or sorry, his friends' mums and his friends' parents to keep an eye on him when he's, because the trouble with Max is, because he's 9, he will carry on playing football and ignore the fact that his pump's going off, because he just wants to play. So he doesn't want to be interrupted. So if he can hide it, which sometimes he does, instead of coming in and saying my bloods are going down, because he knows if that happens, he needs to come in and rest or have a drink or whatever he needs, or juice, whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's really difficult. It's really difficult. It's putting trust in other people, isn't it? And that's what I think we need to do that, really. But I haven't seen any groups as such that do that, but I'll certainly look out for it. It's a good call.
Yeah, and I mean, putting trust in other people for something so big, is it's a hard thing to do. It's not easy.
I think it's harder because you just got used to living that way. You know, you're just used to it. So it's just, you know, he's constantly with us. So we're used to it. And it's just hard to, even when we just worry about, you know, if he was all right all the time. And that would be, yeah, but we it's definitely something that I think that goes down to what you're going to talk about in a bit. I think it's just because it's on our minds all the time. So it's sort of one of the other things that, in case I forget, is what I say to newly diagnosed parents who were in that boat where they just didn't know where to turn, is that, and I sort of what I'm about to say probably doesn't make any sense now because I've said that, but we what we used to think is that we used to live with diabetes, so it would dictate where we went, what we did, when we ate, when we didn't, when we went sports, wherever. It dictated our lives, when we slept, all of those things, where now we'll say no, it lives with us. So we do decide when we eat, when we go out, when we do stuff, it lives with us. However, just on what I just said, that is though, us, we still can't, we're still in a position where we don't want to let Max go away from us, because we worry too much.
Just had a comment, Gary, on the thread down below from Type 1 Diabetes Warriors. It says, wow, diabetes babysitter group. We are in the same position and don't feel can leave our daughter with anyone diagnosed during the lockdown. So we just manage ourselves, school, and the after school club. Wow, incredible. So what we'll do is we'll head over to Morgan, because I think this is going to open some great discussions looking at sort of mental health advocacy work and peer support, and I think there's some discussions that we can carry on there. Over to you, Morgan.
Alrighty. So I guess kind of throughout the last section, you kind of touched on like a lot of what it did to you and your wife and your son, like physically, like in terms of, you know, not getting much sleep, you know, not really having the chance to, you know, really look out for yourselves because of the fear of what could happen. What kind of that obviously takes a huge toll on mental health as well. I mean, there's no way that that stuff can go on and, you know, mentally you don't suffer in some way. I'm really curious to know, like, did y'all have any resources given to y'all to, like, help with the transition or, you know, just try to process it in terms of, like, mental health help?
I think, do you know what? I think a lot of it was more, the help that we got was more about how we managed it. It was more about how we managed Max's condition more than it was how we lived with it. So I can't really remember a time where people sort of really sat me and Sarah down and where we were able to talk about it, you know. And that's, and if I'm honest, and I know we're going to touch on it in a bit with regarding the Captain Lantis thing, but before that happened, before this Captain Lantis thing happened, I didn't even know where to turn. We didn't know where to turn. And it's one of these things where you talk about mental health. It's for us and for all parents with any, not just type one, but anything. It's that constant worry, constant. Never goes away. It's constant. So you just worry all the time. It's horrible. But it's not enough. Since I've met some amazing people, Tom, and, you know, opening up to the social media. If this social media world wasn't here now for things like that, I think there'll be, I wouldn't know where to go. I wouldn't know who to speak to. I wouldn't know what to do. And it does affect me. It does affect my wife. I know it does. You know, we have our moments, but there's not really any, I don't think there is. Even when you go to the diabetes teams and stuff, yeah, they'll talk to you about other families and stuff, but they don't actually sit you down and allow you to open up about it or anything. It's all about the control of it rather than the effect it has on you and your everyday life. Like you say, the people around you, it's massive. Our lives are totally different.
I've noticed that there is a really big lack within, like, mental health help when it comes to, especially within the type 1 diabetes realm. Everyone I've talked to, I've always said, oh no, I wasn't given the proper resources in order to process it. And it took me years to accept. Or, you know, with parents, I mean, you're already going to worry about your child, right? That's just a given. Parents worry about their kids. Excuse me. But it's like it's amplified when something like this happens, especially because your son's diagnosis was so traumatic with, like, the diagnosis and the coma and all that. I mean, it was bound to, you know, amplify things probably times a million. Do you think that having, like, adequate resources probably could have helped y'all with, like, the process and, you know, the acceptance and the just overall transition to something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think, if I'm honest, I think for the first, I mean, I don't really know how long it was, but it felt more like we were in shock for a long time. Because, like you say, you just don't think it's going to happen to you, and you don't get it. You know, when we first left the hospital, it was literally, you know, they're great people. They're amazing at their job. They really are, and they were really good. But it was all about, this is what you need to do when you get home. This is your insulin. There's your bag. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. But there was no thought about us being able to speak about that and what was going to happen when we got home. Yeah, we could phone the hospital and say, look, we're stuck. What do we do? You know, his bloods are this. How much insulin do we give? We've forgotten how to do it. But like you say, there was no real focus on the effect it had on us and still has on us, really. Like I say, it's still affecting our lives. It's just that our lives have changed and sort of evolved around it a little bit. Yeah, I don't remember a time really where we've been able to really talk about it or anything.
And I guess that's where these like social media and these communities like really come into play. Because I know, like, for me, until I was exposed to people, like, especially on Twitter, who had type 1, I didn't accept it. And I was going through the same thing of just, you know, people's stigmas and letting all the stigmas and judgment and my own, like, issues get in the way of just so much. And, like, I just feel like, so this, like, especially this kind of group, you know, it just, it helps when it comes to the whole mental block of not being able to process things.
But like I say, Rowan, what's really helped us is this is social media. Social media's helped us massively because we had nowhere to turn. Nowhere. I had no idea about type 1 diabetes, how many people had it, you know, how many children were affected by it throughout the world and everything else. And we didn't know anybody else, anywhere else that had it. So we'd have no one to talk to about, you know, what do you do? How do you do it? You know, can you help us or anything like that? So we felt a little bit like we were on our own, really. And we had nowhere to go. And like I say, it wasn't until really I sort of hitting social media and then reading things and going on Twitter and things like this, where you hear like people from JDRF or Diabetes UK or yourselves. Like I say, it just made me think, do you know what? It just makes the world really small. We were on a video call early on today with a lovely lady called Belinda from the Australia Diabetes Association. And we're on a Zoom call with that lady. She lives in Australia and she's talking to us about type 1 and diabetes and what we're doing. And that, I think, is helping me. It's helped me a lot, actually, to register what's going on. But I also think it's going to help. I hope it does, but help Max as he grows with it as well. So that, because the one thing I don't want him to think is that this is a condition that will stop him doing anything. My aim for what I'm doing and all the bits I'm doing in the background is so that, you know, and it's up to Max, but I hope when he gets to like 18, 19, 20, that he really wants to embrace the world of type 1 diabetes and help people just like he is now. But I don't want him to ever think it's going to stop him from doing anything he wants to do, because it won't. And I think that's helping me out, because I always thought when he first diagnosed as his dad, when he was little, thinking, oh, you know, all his cousins play football and I want Max to be in a football team, or I want him to go and do all the things that I did when I was younger. And I want him to, you know, like you do, I want him to be like me. I want him to, you know, do all the things that I did and enjoy doing. And when that happened, that sort of took it all away from me. And it didn't need to. I thought it was going to take it all away from me, but and it took a long time to realize that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't stop him from doing anything. And I'm really proud of him for that as well, to be fair, because he doesn't let it stop him. But I think that really has helped me a little bit, because if he didn't do that, he couldn't do anything. I think I'd still struggle a little bit with it. I think social media takes my mind off it, and not take my mind off it, but puts more of a positive, if there is one, but a bit more of a positive thing on it rather than it always being negative all the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, like, it's not very, at least before social media, I didn't really know anybody who had it. And so, like you said, it's very lonely. You don't know anybody where you can ask advice or, you know, figure out if what you're doing is okay and all of this other stuff. And, you know, by having social media, by having these connections, you're able to ask for advice. You're able to see, okay, what could this look like when he's a teenager, when he's in his 20s, his 30s? Yeah. What did people do right? What did people do, like, wrong? I know there's so many times I just tweet out and be like, hey, what should I do here? Or do y'all know anything about this? And I get so many replies. And it's so helpful because I don't know anybody in my day-to-day life that has it, that I'm friends with.
That's it. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's really difficult. It has been really. It still is. It is. We have our days. We still have our days where. Yeah, I think will always be like that. You know, we do.
Well, I mean, but it's a hard thing to. It's a hard thing to live with, and you know, there's no going around that it's going to be, you know, difficult. But like the people in the community, it makes it a little easier, a little more.
And what an amazing community. Because it is amazing. It makes the world feel, everyone says it's a small world, but like I say, going back to speaking to the lady today, it just makes the world feel like we're all on an island, because it's so such a small world and the community so close together. You know, like I say, the Belinda who we spoke to on it, it's like we've known her for years. We had so much in common. You know, it's just crazy. And what a great help, because now we're able to hopefully help people in Australia as well. Fingers crossed that comes about. But
the power that's talking definitely helps
me. Yeah,
it's the power of talking, isn't it?
Definitely, 100%.
You know what I mean? It opens opportunities and doors, and you don't feel alone, and you can just ask for help or ask questions or just listen. It's just, it's amazing.
The difference is talking to people that understand what you're talking about as well.
And that's even more so.
Because you can talk, you know, we talk to family and we talk to friends and we're, you know, and a lot, you know, try and answer a lot of their questions because they don't know. So they'll ask questions like, you know, like I say earlier, you know, can he have cake? Can he have some more cake? Is he allowed cake? Or can he have some sweets? Or can he drink whatever, or have ice blocks like everyone else is having? Yes, he can, but he can't have. He has to, we plan it. We control his diabetes in a way where he eats when he eats his dinner, his breakfast, his tea, and he has treats while he has his meals and things like that, rather than snacks all the time. But they don't understand it. So when you're talking to them, it becomes more of a, them asking you questions about it rather than them understanding how it affects you. So you become more of a teacher than somebody you can sort of lean on. Like, so if I was talking to you, Tom, you understand what it is. You understand how it affects your life. So you understand how that could affect us. You know, it's like if I speak to another father or another mother or, you know, who has a child that's type one, they understand exactly what I'm going through. So it's that common ground that when you're talking to somebody with common ground, it really helps, because then you know that actually what you're going through is exactly the same as what everyone else is going through. So it's not different. So so it takes away that little bit of worry a little bit, because you know actually, that happens to them as well. Right, okay. So it's seven, you know, it's not different. And I think that makes a matter. Again, hence why social media, speaking to you guys, meeting different people all over the world, has just been, it's just been a godsend. It's been brilliant. It's absolutely been brilliant, to be fair.
Well, social media also lets you sort of get the unvarnished opinions of people that are living with type 1, where it's not necessarily filtered through how a physician or other provider interprets what another patient has said to them, and then is trying to relay it to you. You're getting it directly from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And that, like I say, that's what I mean. That's a key thing, because like you say, that's where you know, we've learned so much from that as well since we had the diagnosis. Again, like I say, it wasn't until Max was about three or four that I sort of hit social media properly with it, because I didn't know where to turn. I just didn't realize that it was such a big community. I really didn't. But I've learned so much, like you say, from people like yourself, Crit, and Tom, and Morgan there, listening to the diabetes chat, but also other platforms. You know, the stuff we've learned, we've come so far because of people that are in our same position as us. It's been amazing. It's been a massive help. Massive.
And it's also a much larger user base. I mean, if you think about it, the average consultant probably has, you know, maybe a couple thousand or however many patients that they're managing overall. Yeah. And that's just if they're focusing exclusively on diabetes.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go into some of these Facebook groups and Twitter discussion forums and other things, you may have tens or even hundreds of thousands of people that are all sharing their experiences. And it gets you a much better understanding of sort of a lot of the big picture things. Yeah. It gives you a much better representation of the overall picture, just because you have access to so many more people that are seeing that. You get a lot more of the edge cases that'll pop up that may or may not apply to you.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just me, and I don't think it is, but again, you've hit the nail on the head there, because when you go and see your doctor, you know, the medical team there, they're focused on the numbers, you know, how long Max been in range and everything else. But there's never really any conversations about the days, how did the day go? How's he getting on at school? You know, what does he have episodes at school at certain times? None of that sort of thing. So, and all on everyone who's type one has it affects them differently, doesn't it? So, you know, we'll all have different scenarios and different things that happen, but they never really. I think going back to what you said, Morgan, about that talking about things. When you go and see the medical team, it's always about numbers. It's always about that, you know. So it's never about, you know, us, Sarah, me and Sarah. It's not about us. It's about just about numbers, because that's what the Medtronic pump gives them. It gives them data, and they just share data with us and read data. Where behind that data, there is a human, and that human has a mum and dad. So that data is something really that could be talked about. So, but it never really gets talked about. I know they haven't got all the time. They can't spend hours and hours with patients, but I just think they miss the point a little bit sometimes, especially like you say, when you're talking about how would they ever know it affects me, or how would they ever know if it affects my wife if they never ask?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a firm believer that when it comes to like type one and the way that, you know, your attitude with it and the way that like when you grow up and you start taking care, like you start taking care of yourself and taking your own injections, all that, and the way that you're able to take care of yourself stems from a lot of your mental health.
Yeah.
I know that my acceptance, especially through finding the community and, you know, just the years of working through it and trying to accept that this is my life, this is what I have. My management has gotten a lot better than it was before.
Yeah.
And then with, you know, being a parent, that also y'all's mental health and physical health takes a huge toll, because like you said, you know, you're waking up every hour and, you know, constant worry, and that can pick away at you. And so sometimes it might be nice to have somebody sit down with you and be like, okay, what's going on? How are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's you know, Morgan, like you say, now even today, you know, when he's at school and we're relying on his teachers to keep an eye on him. Now, they've got the other class to keep an eye on at the same time. So it's not just Max. Now, it's really sweet, if I'm honest, because Max is 9 now, but even going back a couple of years ago, we had a parents' evening and it was quite funny because a teacher said to us, she said, well, all the children in his class, they all look out for him. So there's nothing to worry about, because every time his pump goes off, they, all of them in the class go, Max's pump's going off. So it's like the teacher can't miss it, because every child in the school says it, and they still do it now. So she says she'd be in the middle of like on the blackboard, like going through, you know, whatever in maths. And then as soon as that beeps, the whole class still do it in unity, going, Max's pump's going off. So it's quite funny, really. But we worry. Of course we do. Every time we get a phone call from the school, you get that anxiety piece of going, oh, I hope it's just that they're wondering how much insulin to give him or whatever and nothing else. Like he hasn't been playing sports and, you know, had a hypo or anything.
So I have one question and then I'm going to be passing it off to Chris to talk and have a little bit about the Captain Lantis thing. So what advice would you give another parent who is being, whose child is being diagnosed with type 1?
Not to be scared to reach out. Look, you know, social media, it's changed the way we look after Max. It's you know, and not the Captain Lantis thing, just in general, there's so many people out there that are going through the same thing, and that's really helped me, and it's something that I'm doing now to help others. Because, you know, something that me and Max do is, and Sarah, is that every Saturday night we do it, where we go on to diabetes pages, parents, and when we see a newly diagnosed family, we reach out right away, no matter where they are in the world, we reach out right away, because we know exactly what they're going through. But I think it's just a case of, you know, reach out and speak to people that have already gone through it, because at that time you just think it's never going to get any better, but when you talk to people that have been through it, you understand that, you know, there's a way out of it, you know. And like I say, diabetes lives with me now, I decide, Max decides, Sarah decides what we do every day, not Type 1. Type 1 does what we tell it to do, and that's the difference. But yeah, my advice will always be reach out, talk to people.
And with that, I'm going to pass it to Chris. Thank you so much for that section. I really appreciate it.
I just had a bit of a sort of funny reply. You were talking about how when Max's pump goes off in school, everyone sort of shouts in unison. When I was in school, my PE teacher was diabetic, and we didn't really have anything like, you know, Omnipods or pumps back then, nothing that was usable. All I had to do was give my teacher the sort of secret bro nod, I guess the word would be, and he'd automatically just let me go and sit on a computer somewhere. I wouldn't even have to do it, and he wouldn't even tell any other teachers. He'd just let me go because he was diabetic, so he knew if I wasn't feeling it, whether I was high, low, or I just wasn't feeling it, he'd let me go. So I just thought that was funny that you were saying everyone else in maths, because if you've got people there that will support you, it's always good in school.
Yeah, and it reassures us as well. You know, it really does. Knowing his friend, because his friends are, to be fair, his friends, what we're going to talk about next probably relates to that, because what we've done is it's really helped Max and his friends at school. He's become quite a popular lad at school because of what we've done. And not popular, but all his friends know, all the class know him, not just because of the insulin pump, because what we're trying to do in the, you know, within the diabetes community with Captain Lantus and everything else. So it's allowed Max to really openly talk about his condition to his classmates, and they're very interested in it. They're really interested in his pump and how it works, and you know, they're learning.
I love that. That's a good way to go as well, just to be able to be open about it, especially in school where there's lots of peer pressure as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that, you know, and why we do what we do, Norman, it's been amazing. It really has so far.
Anyway, Chris, on to you, my friend.
All right. Well, let's just jump right in here with the talking about the adventures of Captain Lantus. Where did the idea for it come from, and what was the primary motivation? Why did you want to create this book, this resource for people?
So it was funny. So I think what it was, Max was six. So Max was six when he came up with the idea. And it was not long before the first lockdown happened. And he must have been doing something at school, you know, writing stories or doing something at school anyway. Because when my wife went to pick him up from school, he sort of went towards her in the car park, in the playground. But they said, "Oh, wait there, Mum, wait there." And he went back to his teacher and he said, "Miss, I'm going to write a story and I'm going to bring it in on Friday." So he went back to Sarah and he said to Sarah that, you know, "I'll get Dad to help me." So I'm like, so as soon as he come home from school, and bear in mind, he's only six. So he's come home and he said, "Dad, I've got a really good idea and I want to write a story, but I need you to help me." Now, he's six, so I'm thinking this could be about anything. I didn't know what he was going to come out with. Not a clue. And he just said to me, he said, "Dad, he said, my insulin pump, that keeps me alive, doesn't it?" And this is a six-year-old boy. And I'm saying, "Yeah, it does. It keeps you alive." He said, "Right." He said, "Well, you know Iron Man? It's got that thing in his chest." I said, "Yeah." He said, "That keeps Iron Man alive, doesn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it does." He said, "Does that mean I'm an Avenger then?" And I said, "No, it absolutely does mean you're an Avenger, Max. Yeah, you're right. It does." And then we started writing on bits of paper, and it was, so I wrote a piece on one page and he would finish it. I would write it. He'd finish it. And we come up with Bolus Man. It was called Bolus Man first. And we were just messing around and we were just making up characters, Mayor Bolus and King Carb and Medtronic to start with. Actually, we called it Medtronic first. And when I came to bed and I couldn't sleep, because I just went back to that time when Max came home from the hospital with an insulin pump and he had no idea what it was and he was absolutely petrified. He was crying his eyes up and I just thought, well, he didn't have anything, but I did. I had phone numbers, I had information, I could pick up the phone and talk to Medtronic and they would explain to me how it worked, but Max had nothing. So how amazing would it have been for me to be able to introduce him to a superhero that wears an insulin pump, where he gets his superpowers from? Because that three-year-old boy would no longer be afraid, no longer be frightened. He'd actually be inspired by the fact that he is now in his mind, an Avenger, in a way. And that's what inspired me to write it. But I believe that was what made Max want to come up with the idea in the first place. And then we got to lockdown, and I didn't know whether I was going to have a job or not, because the place I worked for at the time was looking like it was going to go into administration because of the lockdown. And I just said to my wife, I said, Sarah, do you know what? I said, because it's not cheap to do it. So I just said to Sarah, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put it on a credit card. I'm going to pay to see if somebody will publish it, or somebody will illustrate it for us and put it together. And even if I never sell a single copy of the book, to see Max in front of his class when the world sort of goes back to normal, to stand there in front of his class with his own book, with his name on the front, about a character that he's created, that's priceless. And that's why we did it. And now the motivation is that we're able to, the way I thought about the book for Max is now the way me and Max think about it to help other children all over the world. Our aim is to one day be able to get them out there so that any child that is either diagnosed with type 1 or a child that is type 1 but goes onto an insulin pump gets a copy of our book to take home with them so that they can read the story and believe in the character and believe that they are a superhero, because they are. What they put up with, how they live their lives, like all of you guys do. Absolute superheroes. Absolutely. That's why we did it.
So would you say that that's sort of the overall message or meaning behind the book, is that anybody living with type 1 is, in a way, a superhero?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And that's what we you know, we always talk about there's not enough diversity in all these different films and stuff like that. And, you know, we wanted to create a character. And, you know, so what, like I said before, you know, what's happened to Max, and it's what I want to happen to a lot of other children, is Max, through the book, has been able to openly talk about type 1, because there's children that are generally not type 1 who are interested in the book. So what we've done is, Chris, is we've written it in a different way than what other books have been written. So there are some brilliant books out there, absolutely brilliant ones. Year One with Type One, what a brilliant book. We got in touch with the author of that book. They sent us a book. It's brilliant. Nina Wadia has written a book, Bionic, I think it's called, a brilliant book. Again, but a lot of the books we read, it was all about how the character lived with type 1, so how they got up and what they ate and how it affected their lives. Well, so what we've done is we've done it like a non-fictional, where it's we've created a town called Beta Town, and everybody in the town has type 1. However, they don't need injections because they're protected, like in the Avengers, they're protected by an insulin cube. So if anybody wanted to pinch that insulin cube, obviously it would affect everybody that lives in the town. So we've tried to do it so anybody can read the book. And then obviously in the story of Captain Lantus, it's that the Mayor Bolas, she has worked on a secret project, which is the insulin pump itself. And she's told Max her secret, just in case the insulin pump, insulin cube ever got stolen. So then when the insulin cube does get stolen, Max finds the pump, puts it on, and becomes their superhero, Captain Lantus. And that's why we did it. So we wanted to do it in a way that other children can read the story. However, it links to everything, you know, we talk about in diabetes, the characters and everything. So if you're a parent, you can go, it's Lantus because of this, it's Bolas because of this, it's Beta Town because beta cells and all of that stuff. But we wanted to do it in a way where other kids could read it, so they could openly talk to Max or anyone who's type one, and they can relate to a character and say, I'm a superhero. That's what I am. This is what this pump is me. I'm a superhero. And that's why we did it.
So what's the process of coming up with this complicated, obviously the setting, yeah, and the storyline and everything else like that is, well, how much of it comes from Max? You know, what's, yeah. How does this all come together in the brain?
Yeah, so a lot of it came from us. So the idea came from Max in a way where we were writing it downstairs, you know, writing it together. We were writing, like I say, I was doing a piece and then he was finishing a mice like piece and we were trying to put it together and everything. And he was talking about that. We were talking about characters. So we'd say, oh, Mayor Bolas, we can call her Bolas. So like, because I was saying we need to have links to diabetes because that's what we need it to be. Yeah, yeah, Mayor Bolas. But then I don't know what happened really, Chris, to be fair, because I've never written a book. I wasn't great at school, if I'm honest. I wasn't a lover of school. And then I literally, like I said, I came to bed and I was just thinking it over and over and over and over about, you know, we'd already worked out the town piece. So we knew we wanted to create a world where everybody was type one. And then I don't really know where it came from. I literally got a pen. I walked downstairs, got a notepad and started jotting it all down of what was the basis of a story. And then literally, like I say, I just read it and I thought it works. And then I sent it to an editor to have a look at. So they looked at it and I said, look, if it doesn't work, tell me, because, you know, it's not the cheapest of processes. So, you know, I want it to help people, but if it's not really going to work, then please tell me. And they got back to me literally the next morning and said, it's brilliant. You've got everything in there, from magic to superheroes to a town to everything. It's there. It works. And then so they help you put it together in a way where you can have it illustrated. So we sent it to a company to illustrate it, the first book. And then when we got it, we did a GoFundMe page to try and raise the money to, so people bought the book before it was created, sort of thing, so we could get the money to do it. And we just been blown away from it, blown away by it. The feedback that we get from parents and even older people that have got type one have bought a copy and gone, Gary, honestly, it's brilliant. It's really good. I wish we had it when we were younger. And it's for us, Chris, like I say, that the main reason for it is so if you ask me what is the best thing, some of the best things that I get from it now and what Max gets from it, and Max will tell you the same. He's in bed at the moment, but he's in bed. But he would tell you the same if he was up. Now, when we donated some to a lady in Los Angeles, now the lady lost her son to type one, and I saw that, and I just, oh well, it obviously it frightens me, and it's just a frightening thing. So me and Max sent a load of books to her. Donated them to her, and what she does is she puts them in like rucksacks and little puts rucksacks of toys and stuff like that in, gives them to children that are just diagnosed. Now honestly, I can't tell you how proud I am when I see a child who lives the other side of the world in Los Angeles and they're sat there in their living room, they've just been diagnosed, and there is our book on their front room floor. Now this come from myself and Max sitting in a front downstairs in the front room where Max has just come home from school with a brainwave, to seeing our book in Los Angeles, New Zealand, Australia, France, Germany, and obviously here in the UK. It's such a motivation, and it really helps me and it helps Max especially, because it's a positive on something that's so negative, and that's what's helping Max, because he loves it. He, you know, jumping on that call today, you think, I mean, Tom, you'll agree, when you spoke to him and he wrote down some questions to ask you, you know, Max thinks he's like Michael Parkinson or something there. He thinks he's probably, you know, you know.
They were really good questions. And so, guys, go check them out on the website. I can see him. He's got a amazing outlook on things, hasn't he? And his spreading diabetes awareness, he's incredible. He's done events for JDRF, he's raised money. He's such a fabulous little chap. And I really love the books. I've got my books here, and I've read them a few times to Harry. And Gary, what's your favorite book? Do you have a favorite?
Well, I think, like, I mean, I remember what you said. The first one is always going to be the special one because it was the first book.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing, and again, I've thought, no, I didn't ever think I'd write a book. I'll be honest, I never did. But the second book, I literally, because we had, I suppose, the way, going back to what you say, Chris, about how it works in your brain, you have a start, middle, and end. Now, because we already had everything in place in the first book, I literally walked to the shop and I walked back and said, Sarah, get me a pen and paper. I think I've got another idea for another book. She's like, no, you haven't. I said, I promise, quick, let me write it down before I forget it. And there is a structure to it, how it works. But I can't really explain it because I didn't really know how I got there in the first place. All I know now is we've got Captain Atlantis 1 and 2. And like I say, it's helping children and people with type 1. And it's helped us. And how it's helped us is because it's helped us meet so many people. Help, like what we were talking about before, Megan, it's helped us. There's people coming to us to go, what a great book. Tell us your story. Talk to us. Talk to me. Tell me how it's been like. And then they tell me the same. And we go, you know, that's how it is. And me and Max, like you say, every Saturday, we look at diabetes groups and we find children that have just been diagnosed. And then out of the blue, we will message those families directly through Messenger and we will send them the books for free. We send them the books for free. So we do sell them, but we only sell them to make, because we obviously got to keep producing them. But our aim is to one day get to a point where we can just, if somebody sponsored us or somebody would sponsor the Captain Atlantis as a brand or whatever, then we could give them away. But we give away more than we sell, but we've still got, it costs, we've got to print them all the time. So we sort of have a happy balance, but our biggest motivation is when we're able to just donate them to children or, you know, like I say, anywhere in the world, just randomly message them on a Friday or a Saturday and say, look, we want to send you a book. You're not on your own. We know exactly where you are as a family and we were exactly there. And I know this book will help your child, your daughter or your son. They will read this and they'll believe, they'll think, because they are a superhero. And that's what this book is. It's to give them something to relate to. So Captain Atlantis, yeah, it's been amazing, to be fair. I would never ever thought it would be as... get the feedback that it got either. I was so nervous when I sold the first book or sent the first book because I just thought they're going to tell me it's rubbish. I'm just going to get feedback and say that's a rubbish story, mate. You know, don't give up your day job. But it's been really good. It's really good and helping so many people, which, like I say, it's our biggest motivation. That is.
All right, so we've kind of talked around this a little bit and hit on it sort of from a couple of different angles. But if you had to summarize and give sort of the blurb on the back cover in a few sentences, as far as Captain Atlantis 1, at least, how would you sum it up in a paragraph or so?
Yes, I mean, I've read the blurb on the back of this book about 1,000 times, Chris, but now you've asked me, it feels like I've never even read it. But it's so there, like I said to you before, the blurb is that this town, there's a book about a town, beta town, where everybody has diabetes, but they live their lives as normal as anybody else does. That's it. And they get their life-saving insulin cube stolen from their town and they need a superhero to save them all. And this is where the insulin pump comes in, where it's found by Max. Max puts it on, turns into Captain Atlantis. Nobody else knows he's Captain Atlantis. So even when Max, and it's a shame he's not here, if he was awake, I'd bring him in, but he's asleep. But he would tell you that when he tells you about Captain Atlantis, he won't tell you he is Captain Atlantis because it's a secret. So even in real life, he won't tell you he's Captain Atlantis. He keeps it a secret. But That's pretty much what it is. It's a book about a superhero that lives in a town where everybody has type 1 diabetes and he saves the day, basically. And that's really what it is. It's a pity I haven't got one in front of me, really, Chris. I can read the blurb, you never know. I've read it so many times as well. But yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
I've got it in front of me, mate, and I think you just pretty much sum it up beautifully.
Yeah.
So fair dues.
I did get, I was close. I think I was close to it, yeah.
Pretty much.
Do you and Max have favorite characters in the book?
Yeah, well, Max's favorite character is going to be Captain Lantus, because that's him. And I would pretty much say his dad is my favorite character, but that would be a bit. So no, I think Captain Lantus is our favorite, because we created this character from nowhere, and we had to get a trademark. I had to go see a trademark solicitor about it and everything to be able to call it Captain Lantus, because obviously Lantus is a brand, is a trademark brand. So we thought that would be ruined and we would have to change the name of it. But luckily, because it doesn't confuse anybody with actual medicine, it's a different product altogether. We were able to use it. So that was good. But yeah, Captain Lantus is our favorite character. I think he's my favorite character as well, just because, like I say, it's just the fact that we've created it, but also it's Max as well, because Max is in the book, but I think the book does show his character in real life, how he's caring and he cares about other people. So, and that shows out in his character in the book as just Max. So before he gets his superpowers, there is a part of the book where they basically have a food festival and everybody is looking forward to it. And the time they always look forward to the food festival. However, somebody has to volunteer to look after and guard the queue because they can't afford it to be stolen and they know it could be. And Max volunteers to do that. So he sacrifices what he really wants to do to look after other people, which is exactly what he does now in real life. So I think I'd say Max is my favorite character. It is Captain Lantus.
Okay. Well, now we've touched on this. There's a second book out, a Captain Lantus 2.
Captain Lantus 2, yep.
And that's, it's a follow-on book, is that right?
It is a follow-on book.
Okay. And new characters, new sort of the same sort of group of questions is about volume 1.
Yeah, so the first book, so there is a new character, Poppy Star. So in this second book, so in the first book, it was all around. So the plot was a food festival and that, you know, he needed to save the day with the food festival. The second book is more about sports day. So it's sports day. Now, still nobody knows his secret, but in the second book, he already has his powers. But what I've done in the second book is I've explained in a way where Mayor Bolas is speaking to Max before he takes part in sports day. And it would explain to the reader that he already has superpowers. So although really you should read the first book before you read the second one, but if you didn't, the start of the second book sort of explains that he has superpowers because of his insulin pump. Now the moral of the story in the second one is that he knows he can win every race and he knows he can win a tug of war in every event. But it's that moral thing around whether it's right to do so, because there's a character called Poppy Star who generally wins, but she works very hard to win. So she, you know, sacrifices going out with her friends to train and practice because sports day means the world to her. But Max wants to beat her and he's always wanted to beat her. And you'll have to find out in the second book whether that works out. But obviously the same sort of thing happens in the second book where the town gets disrupted and the cube is tried to be stolen again. So they try and ruin sports day. So Captain Lantus does have to save the day again. And then it gets to the end of the book where the race comes in between Max and Poppy Star. And then that's, I won't tell you the ending in case you purchase the second book, but it's a bit more of a moral thing in that one. And again, goes back to Max's character in real life, how he cares about people and he's not selfish in any way. But yeah, it was good. And again, it was easier to write the second book because it was pretty much, we already had the plot in the first one. So we sort of just changed the plot, you know, it's gone from a food festival to sports day. So with sports day, you can work on different things. And this Mayor Bolas is the main character in it, you know, with Max. So Yeah, we're really proud of. I'm really proud of the second one. I think I really like the second one, and I still. I know. I said it to you, Tom. No, I think the second one's better. I just think because I think the second one's better. Max, when me and Max sat down and we were working out the second one and we talked about Sports Day, because yeah, I just think the second one's better. That's my opinion, anyway. But everyone will have different opinions.
So when's the third one coming out, Gary?
Well, that's the thing. So again, we want to. So we've got a story in our head and our minds. Me and Max have been talking about it. But again, Tom, it's so difficult because it just costs so much money to do it. We want to do a third story, but we also want to do an activities book. You know, you're colouring in dot to dot, your word searches, all diabetes words and stuff. Bit more of an educational piece for youngsters, but do it in a way where they'll understand and all of those things. But because we need the illustrations to be exactly the same as what they are, it's just literally the cost. Because like you say, because it's non-profitable, we donate books for free, and then any money we do make, it goes back into reprinting the first and the second book. So we're just I suppose we're just saving up and just in try and get to a point where we can raise the funds really to get the third one done. And you know, I'm always in the mindset of, because we tried to raise the money for the second one. We raised the money for the first one. I just think every time I do that, maybe I'm just overthinking it, but I always think, oh, maybe people just think I'm just trying to keep raising money all the time. But hopefully we'll get there. We had a purchase of books last week, which I think is going to help us a little bit towards the cost of getting the next one done. And then we'll go from there. Yeah, it's just one of those things. But we will do it. We will get there. We have lots of ideas in our heads. Max wants toys and all sorts. He wanted me to write to Netflix and see if Netflix would make it into a cartoon. And Pixar. He sent a book to Pixar, thinking that maybe Pixar might scrap the next Lightyear movie and do a Captain Lantis one instead. But they obviously went with the Lightyear one instead. Bless him.
Well, thanks, Tom, for stealing my my last question there.
I'll edit that out of the podcast.
are there obviously, you know, big picture, long term, dreams and ambitions for where all of this goes? Are we eventually anticipating having a, you know, box set? Yeah. Of volumes, yeah. 1 through 5 or 1 through 10. I mean, it sounds like you've hit the high points with sort of the food and the exercise being major challenges. But anything else there? You know, some of the big picture, hard to manage things that need to be addressed for kids.
I think in the third one, the plot we were looking at was a school trip outside and. School trip instead of Sports Day or food festival. There's lots of things we can do with it. And like I say, my biggest dream really for it would be that one day it is available to all children. When, like I say, instead of just getting a leaflet, you know, to go, here's a phone number to call when you get an insulin pump. Actually, no, here's a book for you, to your daughter or to your son. Let them take this book home and read it, because they're now super. They're just like Captain Lantis, who gets his superpowers from an insulin pump. That's what I really want it to do. I want it to really be available for everybody. That's what we really want to do. I mean, ambition-wise, Chris, obviously, you know, we'd all dream that one day it could be a cartoon or it could be a movie, or we have 5 books out, 6 books out, you know, different, you know, like say Max is talking about toys, and I've looked at teddy bears and things. People have asked me for teddy bears, but it's just so expensive to do it. You know, it's prototypes and things, and I've looked into so many different things, you know, action figures, and there's just so much we want to do with it. T-shirt, you know, clothing and things like that. We just want it to be somebody, it's a character that people within our community can really look, you know, like Rufus the Bear at JDRF, everyone recognizes Rufus. Just Captain Lantis to be that sort of character for children with type 1 just to go, he's our superhero. That's our character. That's him. That's who we look up to, sort of thing. That's our biggest, that's my biggest sort of dream with it, really. There's so much we can do with it. But it, again, like I say, it's finance, really, and stuff like that that stops us from really pushing it any further. But we'll keep going, and
you must be extremely proud, though, Gary. Like, as parents and Max, whatever direction this goes, let's hope it continues. But you look at what you're doing, the message behind it, the sort of spreading awareness and giving it to young children and families and supporting them in them early days. You know what I mean? It's tremendous. And Tom, honestly, I completely applaud you.
Yeah, Tom, honestly, if it stopped tomorrow, if somebody said to me tomorrow, you're not going to make any more books, Gary. All your social media is going to be cancelled tomorrow. All of it's gone tomorrow. It's the proudest thing. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. Because to see, like I said earlier, to see not just Max be able to openly talk to his friends at school and them going, oh, Captain Lantus, Max is Captain Lantus. Let's play in the playground, whatever. To see that up there when they're, do you know what? You might have seen it on our social media, but one of the proudest things I ever saw, and it's still one of the proudest things I've ever seen from today, from now, and it absolutely blown my mind, is on World Book Day, a mother sent me and Max a picture of her son who made a Captain Lantus outfit and went to school as Captain Lantus. Now, they could have went as Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Hulk, anybody, but that character is his favourite superhero. Now, that nearly drove me to tears just looking at that. That was the proudest thing I'd ever seen. So
I can imagine.
If it doesn't happen, that image of that young lad there, who I don't know, never met him, never spoke to him, never met his parents, no one. Just things like that have made every single minute of putting it together, every single penny spent to put it together, you know, every trip down to the post office to post any books, it's the best thing I've ever done by a million, million miles. Best thing I've ever done. So even if it don't go any further, I'll look back on in 40 years time and show my grandkids and all of that. Look what I've done. Look what we've done. Look what Max done together. Look what we achieved then. Never be prouder than what I am right now for what we've done. Never.
All right. That just about finishes my section of stuff. I'll toss it back to Tom to wrap up, although I think I would be remiss if I didn't note that I find it somewhat amusing that Captain Lantus actually doesn't need Lantus if he's on an insulin pump.
No, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It's just, we're just trying to link, because we did try and call him Medtronic, but Medtronic wouldn't give us the, we weren't allowed to use it. We weren't allowed to use the name. Because that's the pump he's on, so we were going to call him that, but they wouldn't let us use it, which was a shame. But yeah, it is ironic that he doesn't need to use Lantus insulin; he just the pump. Yeah,
brilliant stuff, Gary. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure coming on this evening and chatting to us. I know we've spoke before on the diabetes chat stories, which I'll post up, and you guys can listen back to Max, because me and Max have a little chat, and then Max asked me some questions, which are fabulous. Before we maybe just finish, how can people go about checking out your website and your other social media platforms? What are you on, and what can people search to check you out?
Yeah, so we're on our Facebook page is the Adventures of Captain Lantus. We are obviously on Twitter, as you're on here. We're on Instagram. Clantus, C Lantus 77, and we're also, obviously, to purchase books or to see our story, it's on www.captainlantus.com. So please visit the site, and like you say, if you know any families out there, if we know anybody who's type 1 who would benefit from our book, please pass on our information to them. If you know anybody that's been newly diagnosed, please contact us direct, and we will donate the books to them. And me and Max will even sign them. Max quite likes the old autograph piece. So let us know, and we'll happily donate some books to anybody that you might know out there.
And some comments coming through this evening, Gary. Yep. Roz, thank you for sharing your story. It has really made me reflect on what my parents had to go through. I've said it before, but I will never be able to thank my parents enough. So thank you for coming on and talking and giving your parents' perspective. Mark was saying about he remembers in the 90s where he felt quite lonely, and they had the internet and support groups like the DS Forum. But support groups like Facebook groups and Diabetes Twitter Space is like the next step. So that's great. Type 1 Diabetes Warrior, a mom of a child with diabetes. Glad I found this chat tonight. Got to go now, but I'll be sharing a link with our family support group and hopefully log on again. And then Ria says, where can I purchase the book? So I've sent her a link for that. And then Ben, who's on the line still, says, actually, my ferret was called Poppy, and she suffered from severe hypoglycemia. And we always called her Poppy Star. So she was honestly the best little girl ever. And it's just funny how you've named the character, Gary, in the book, Poppy Star.
He's not trying to chase me for copyright, is he, Tom?
I hope not. And Alison, totally agree regarding worrying, being type 1 myself. Alison has a type 1 son as well. And looking at what's available for parents from day one. Sure, I have all the type 1 knowledge, but can feel like double trauma. Stay strong, everyone. Keep talking. T1 kids are the bravest. Superheroes rule okay. Brilliant stuff, Alison. That's amazing. But Gary, honestly, thank you for coming on, buddy. It's been amazing like catching up with you the last couple of months, and I'm sure we'll continue to work with each other as we go on.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, thank you for inviting me on. Thank you for letting me share it. Like you say, it makes a massive difference when you're able to talk to people and share the story. So thank you for allowing me to come on, Tom and Chris, Morgan. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's been an interesting discussion, very elucidating, and it's a great opportunity to highlight the fantastic resource that you and Max have come up with it and put out there for the community.
Thank you.